We only took a week off, but honestly, I was thinking this morning, it feels like a really long time since I've talked to you guys.
At least 2 weeks. It feels like at least 2 weeks.
Well,
I
I
guess it
didn't get
has
to
been
talk
2 weeks.
to you in Boston.
That's true. That is true.
So it's been a while.
So it has been about 4 weeks since we've actually talked. Yeah.
I've been
Yeah,
meaning
it's
to put
weird. Like
together.
I was gone. I was in Nashville this last week, and it just felt like the space between the last time we recorded, it feels really long. And I don't know if that's maybe because just a lot's been going on, or I don't know, but
Since next week is 500, I'll put together that little. It's not many. I go through every once in a while. My phone suggests, it says, "Hey, would you like to look at memories?" And it's pictures of us three. The phone puts together like a compilation of us three, and it always reminds me that I need to publish that. So next week is 500, the actual 500th
Yes.
episode. So for next week, I'll put together that thing. But it reminds me that of the picture that we took together. I was like, I cannot leave Boston without at least getting a selfie of the three of us, which was very difficult to get.
Yeah,
Much more
it
difficult than you would
was.
imagine because we were all being pulled in other directions. But we got it. So I
So
got it.
does that mean that do we record 501 next week or do we take a week off?
No, we take another week off.
All right.
Do we? Is that how it works?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. We could actually try to get ahead. That's a thing that people do is they record when they don't have to so that they have
What?
one. Yeah,
Tell me
no,
more
right?
about this.
Yeah.
We don't talk
Who
about
are
current
these?
events, so that would be okay, but I can't stand listening to podcasts that aren't talking about current events. It drives me crazy. Like these ones that
Oh.
like, like the comedy podcasts, and like I said, I'm not a Rogan fan, but those ones in that area, there's a couple adjacent that I listen to. And when they're not talking about current events because they canned like six of them before they went on tour, it drives me crazy. I almost don't want to listen. If they're not going to talk about like the news or the like whatever the big controversy is in their category of comedy or whatever, because it's been recorded before anything happened, I kind of lose interest. I'm just like, well, I don't need to listen to
But
this.
that's because you expect them to talk about those things,
Yeah,
but
because they
people don't
try
expect
to.
us
That's
to
the
talk
thing.
about
That's
them.
what's a, yeah. Nobody would expect us to do it, so I think we can can a couple, but it does bug me when there's like a big current event that nobody pays any attention to because it was recorded before that event. So
Well, in
that's
case
just that.
anybody
That's a.
doesn't realize it, we're recording this. What's today? September 24th, 2003 is when we're recording this episode right now. We're just going to hang on to it until we need it.
It's actually the 20,
Well,
2025.
it is not. Don't tell them that. It breaks the magic. Well, what have you guys been up to? What's
I
going
got
on?
my porch poles installed. That's my
Yeah.
video this week.
All 11 of them?
Yes, it was really heartbreaking to have to cut these hydrangea. I think it's one of the patrons told me, wandering hydrangea, these vines that grow up three of the poles. And the whole corner of the porch was basically like a jungle because these things went up and wrapped themselves around the header beam and everything. And I had to go in there and cut them all the way down to be able to pull those three posts out. When I had the porch built, I built the bottom and local carpenters built the top in 2013. And they said, "What do you want to do for porch poles?" I said, "Oh, just put 4x4s in there. I'll eventually replace them." But at the time, I guess I did think I was going to make them myself. I guess the whole, I started buying them, but I never was able to see ones that I like. Every once in a while, if I was at an antique shop, you'd see they'd always have a couple, and I'd be like, "Do you have 11 of these?" And they'd be like, "No, we got eight." I'm like, "No, I need a full set of 11." So you do see that once in a while at the antique architectural shops up here. You do see porch collections of porch poles, but I never saw ones that were at least what I envisioned. And so I made that declaration years ago that I was going to make them myself. And I'm really happy that I did. They look really good. I'll send you guys a picture. I did a couple of little posts about them, but the I'm still not done. I'm hoping to post that video this week, so this coming Friday, 2023, this Friday, September 20, 2023. No, I'll have that post out this week, but there's a couple more things I need to do, and it's raining out, so I might have to work in the rain just to get them done. I got to do like a fascia board and a couple of other things. Just it's all going to be natural wood for now. I might paint it eventually, but and you know when you do something and it spurs on like this looks really good, but it looks crappy next to what was there. So now I have to change that part
Oh,
too.
yeah.
So now I might do the whole underside of the porch because it's just naked beams. So a couple of years ago, me and Patrick put lights under there, which looked beautiful. And he said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I'll just put the conduit up there." One year I'll never, one year. I'll never get to it, but I want to cover that. And so now that is right here. So I'm probably going to cover, when you look up, you'll see wood. You won't see the exposed roof rafters that cover the porch. So that's going to be another project. I'm already pricing out the wood, and I got a vision of how I want to do it. I'm going to cover up the electrical that's showing. So that's coming. So I'm excited that that's done. I put out my speaker video, which I started in March. I didn't realize how long ago that's been kicking around the shop. Dang. I haven't looked. Somebody let me know if the thing broke 50,000 views. I have not looked. People don't look to me for speakers, and everybody's mad that, you know, everyone's mad in general. People who like audio are mad in general. They just look, they're like,
not at you, just
no,
in general.
They're just mad in general. They're always
looking for how they live their lives.
Yeah, they're just walking around looking for indiscretions when it comes to audio. Like, that speaker should be pointed in the other direction. It shouldn't be on change. Mm. That grill's going to change the waves of the sound. You can't send bass through wheels. Yeah, these guys, they just walk around looking for problems. And now they're all in my comment section. So I stopped looking. Mm-hmm. It's like a glue trap for audio nerds. And
hey, it did break 50.
It did?
Yeah. Is it 54?
Oh, there you go. 54. Yeah. That was one of those, just set it and forget it. Never look back. I pinned the comment that said I made what I wanted for me. Good luck, everybody.
I'm out.
Have fun. Turn the lights off when you leave.
That's funny.
No, but they came out. I liked them. I personally like them. They're like, you know, I can't stand the comments. It's like, this isn't one of your best. You know, I expect higher quality. I'm like, shut up. I literally work 20 hours a day. Sometimes things that I'm not quite interested in get overlooked. It's okay. And so the speaker video's out there if you'd like to see it. Oh, the big comment is,
hang on just a second. I got to say something.
Go ahead.
At any job, is everything you do going to be one of your bests?
No. And that's why I just...
No! Like, that doesn't even make sense. What a weird standard to hold anybody to.
Yeah.
This new thing you did has to always one up the thing that you've done before. Like, come on.
Yeah. Only Colin Furze can do that.
That's right. He's a special gift.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. Proceed.
Oh, I was going to say, everyone's like, I picked some audio track that seemed kind of funky to me off of YouTube music selection. And I can't play Led Zeppelin Stairway to Heaven I can't play Reeling Back the Years or something that I would probably want to play just to test the audio. Can't do that. So I just picked this audio track. Everyone's like, I can't believe you didn't even like let us hear the sound. I'm like, what difference would it make? You listen to it on a speaker that's an eighth of an inch in diameter.
Yeah, you're watching this on your phone on a train going, I can't hear the actual.
Yeah. The bass. Could you turn up the high mid-range? The mid-range, you got to point them at each other. I was like, okay. That's why I... The speaker it was Patrick's idea. He's like, wouldn't it be cool if we had speakers up there? And I was like, yeah, that's actually a good idea. And then I thought of a visual that would excite me. And so I was like, all right, let's do it. But I never would have thought it straight away because the reveal is boring. It's like, okay, there's a thing that I made that does something that I can't demonstrate to you. Whether I could play licensed music or not, it's still not going to matter because you're listening to it through your earbuds anyway. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that, like, when it comes to making videos, I'm always trying to think of an interesting payoff, unless it's something that I really need, and then I could do a couple of beauty shots. I'm always thinking of the beauty shot. And to have something, it's like, you know, a couple of years ago, I restored a gun, and then I didn't fire it, because I knew YouTube would throttle the algorithm would throttle it. So I restored this whole gun, and I'm like, you didn't shoot it? What's wrong with you? I'm like, you know, you need that payoff. And so I just thought the speaker payoff would be less than exciting. So I never would have thought to make speakers unless Patrick pushed me. Anyway, it's over and done with. We can move on now.
Have you ever gotten to, you work on something, you're very happy with it, it looks great, and you get to the part where you need to shoot the beauty shots for the payoff, but you are so done with the project and you just want to move on. And you're like, you know what? This is good enough. Like, this ending's good enough. I just need to start the next project. Do you ever do that?
My rhythm is usually this. Like, if I'm doing a build for video, if it takes either a week or 3 weeks, I get to the point where it's installed and done, just like the speakers. they were done. They were installed and done. And I'm like, and I started working on the edit, but I never shot the beauty shots. And so I finally went up there. I didn't even know how to connect that amp to my phone. I mean, every time we listened, it was through Patrick's phone. He had the app, this whim. I don't know. I just want a Bluetooth to a speaker that's the size of a football, and that's it. That's all I want to do. Or my earbuds. So when it came to these big speakers, we needed a preamp and a this and this, all that technology went out my brain in like 1990, setting up a receiver and a record player, like all that went out the window in the early 90s. Prior to that, like me and my dad would be at the Lafayette record shop and buying components, you know, all that was like the way I grew up. And then when things got easier and the Walkman came out and all I had to do was pop a tape into this thing and pump music directly into my ears, that was it. I never cared about components again. And so now here it is years later and Patrick's like, we need this streamer. I'm like, will I be able to Bluetooth to it? And he's like, I think so. And so I had to buy Spotify to listen to this WIM thing because Spotify and WIM have some sort of cohesive branding. I don't know. So I finally pay for Spotify now. I forget what I was complaining about.
You know, we can come back to your complaint when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. The other day I went up and I sat with the speakers and tried to figure out how to get the Bluetooth hooked up and everything. And that's when I got my beauty shots. And all I was waiting for was my cat to walk through the picture. That's all I was waiting for. Cat walking through. If anybody stays to the very last shot, my cat walks through the speakers and meows. That's it.
You know, I've done a couple speaker builds myself, and the audiophiles definitely want to let you know that they know stuff, right? that's their passion. So, of course, when you're really passionate about something, you're going to let somebody know that they're doing it wrong, or there's another way to do that, or a better way, or that you're an idiot. And all I can think back is, you know, my dad telling me that he would duct tape a transistor radio to his bike and listen to the Rolling Stones on a mono speaker from a radio broadcast. If that was good enough for him, this what I'm doing here, this is going to work for me. Yeah, I am not moving my speakers out away from the wall. This is where my stereo goes. Yeah.
It was Patrick's idea to put them on wheels, which I thought would be a good idea because they were heavy. And this way I could push them around if I want, or if we have a party up there, we could put them in a different spot easily without having to drag them across the floor. And a couple of the comments were like, oh, how are you going to get bass to the building through like this, the wheels? And then another comment was like, oh, real smart. Don't test the electronics before you glue the box shut. I'm like, didn't you watch me put a speaker in a hole that's the size of a basketball? Like, never mind. I'm done.
But we're done complaining, right?
Yeah. So anyway.
I was like, oh, good luck with all that rattling. Like, didn't you
none
just watch me
people
put
listen to the show, 45... so we didn't offend anybody here.
Didn't you just watch me put 45 screws in the metal that hold... And besides, I had to include Lincoln Electric in a video eventually. So, I mean, it's been all summer long. I've hardly made anything out of steel. So when this thing, I'm like, I'll make it look like steel, like gun box. Well, that's a good idea.
So, they're your speakers. You can do whatever you want to.
That's what, if you see the reel I posted last night, I said I made speakers for me. I was going to get all ornery in the reel description. I was going to be like, if you don't like it, tune out. Go listen to your speakers.
Yeah,
but I re-edited it to just I made speakers for me, and I was gonna put the meme like this that has this other part that sticks up like this, you know that meme. I was gonna put that at the end of the sentence. I left that out. let's do an episode on meme comments.
We need to go back to that. We've done that before. David, what have you been up to?
Hello. Do you remember the little toy kids Casio keyboard that I started months and months ago?
Yes.
And then put it on the shelf?
Yes.
Waiting for the right opportunity? I'm almost done. This is one of my favorite projects ever.
Oh, what?
Oh, that looks cool. that looks
awesome.
Like DeWalt?
I got rid of all the plastic. And
so cool.
There's it's kind of three tiered. It sits up like an old Moog or Korg synthesizer, so the back panel is angled up. The cut out of metal, the original panel, and then I added a bunch. They're not in here yet. I'm going to wire that up later today. But the top has a bunch of guitar pedals that look like it's all part of the unit. So I've gutted the guitar pedals and put it on there. So it's got metal working. I screen printed the face on the metal.
I was going to ask you about
the controls.
Yes. Oh, that's so cool.
It's been a few years since I've screen printed, so I had to. Emulsion doesn't last for 5 years, so
it doesn't, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it turns brown.
And we got there's some soldering, some electronics in there, and we got woodworking. This is a very multi-discipline thing, and I am so incredibly thrilled. It's better than I ever would have imagined, and
that's awesome.
I get a lot of crap. Not a crap, but people will say, David, you don't talk up your projects enough. You'll point out the mistakes here, or I just don't talk them up here on the podcast. This one I'm talking up because it is one of my favorite projects.
It looks
ever.
Great.
It's come out
when
so
you
good.
Showed it just now. I'm like, is that the makeover or you're about to make it over? Because it looks like it's a done
yeah,
project.
So the original just was a flat piece of plastic with two speakers in there, and it had a bunch of controls. So on here, there were certain, it had built-in songs, and I didn't need those songs. So I didn't, that functionality on the main board has been covered up. So it does have buttons for the various drums, the kick, snare, hi-hat. And then it's got a number pad so you can go through the different tones on there. It still has the plastic panel keys. I left that as it is. I bought this at the Goodwill. It was at the Goodwill, and I left the little cheat sheet stickers that the previous owner put on the keys. So all the C's are red and all the D's are orange. And then on the back is where I'm wiring everything up, and up top here where the guitar pedals will go, plus a tube preamplifier is going in here. So you can overdrive the tube preamplifier to get a little bit of distortion in there. And it's been quite the project. I am so incredibly thrilled with how it came out.
That's awesome. Okay, so we were talking about the audio being a hard output to show off.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan for what showing off the output of this, or is it about the visual? Like, is the output the visual or the audio, or both?
So I recorded a song with the keyboard in its factory state at the very beginning of the video. And I said, hey, I wrote this silly little song. It's multi-track. I used the piano and the organ and the built-in drums on there. And I used, so you can see me playing that song, and it's kind of mixed in with me taking the keyboard apart. So there's like a montage at the beginning. And then this will get finished up today. So then tomorrow I'm going to record a new song with its in its new state with the two preamplifier and all the effects built into it. And I've never had to write a song where there was a deadline. So this is kind of like a new pressure for me. So the ending, the payoff will be hopefully the visual and the song that I'm about to write and record.
Awesome. That's cool, man. That looks great.
It gets, this one scratches all of the itches for me with the multi-discipline plus music. I love making music so much. So, yeah, this one's a
fun
one.
Did either of you guys ever get a copyright strike for your own music?
Never.
Because the algorithm just doesn't understand it?
No. I have had twice now, two comments saying, I am so sick of this AI music. And I was like, I wrote and recorded that. I don't know if that's a compliment or a complaint.
That's pretty funny. Cool. Well, I was in Nashville last week. I went to Autodesk University. And so Autodesk brought me down to go to that. And it was only a couple hours away. So I was able to just like drive down and stayed for a few days. And it was not what I was expecting. I'm not sure what I was expecting, to be honest, but it was really cool and just it was at a scale that I did not expect.
Did you learn software? What did you do?
Well, so I was thinking it would be a lot of classes, like how to, you know, how to do this thing better, how to do this thing better. And there were some of those things, but the stuff that I went to was more about what Autodesk is doing across all of their different things, which is way bigger than I thought it was anyway. But the way that they're improving things and the stuff that they're adding. And so a lot of it was stuff that's not even out yet that they showed off. They were doing, and they had a couple different keynotes. And one of the keynotes with the like CEO, he was doing live like tests on software, showing things off that was pre-beta. Like it wasn't even close to being released, which is really unstable. And he was doing it live, doing the demos live, or other people were doing the demos live, which is pretty dangerous because stuff doesn't work. Like you're in front of 8,000 people in this room and, you know, but everything worked pretty well. And it was pretty incredible. I think the biggest thing that I took away from the whole, like what they were building was that they're obviously building in AI like everybody else is, but instead of doing like a top, like an AI top layer on everything, which is kind of how I look at when people add AI to Notion and to Google Meet and to all, you know, it's just this top level little helper thingy that, I don't know, regurgitates what you say, or it just writes down what you say, or it, you know, it feels very superficial. So they were talking about how for like 10 years, they've been working on underlying models instead of these top level models. They've been working on stuff that, like a model that only cares about this type of stuff, and one that only, and they have, the company's broken up into like an engineering, like how to build apartment buildings and hospitals and stuff like that. And then there's design and make, which is where we fit. And then there's media and entertainment. So movies, video games, stuff like that. So they're building three models that are about those disciplines at a low level. And then they're building them underneath the software so that the software can take advantage of it. And the way that that actually played out was the examples they gave for like for Fusion, which is the thing that I was, you know, I cared the most about. They showed it, they showed the AI being a way to like skip the, I don't know. I'm not even sure how to explain it without watching the video. It was able to generate geometry, three-dimensional, editable, real, normal geometry as a, like, as a ideation tool. So he gave the example, he was up there and he said, you know, we're going to make an air fryer. And so he, in the text prompt, described, my goal is to model an air fryer and it has these features and I want it to have a handle and it has to have this thing or whatever. And so it generated models for just the outer shells of air fryers. And it did it like three or four times. And then he said, oh, this one looks closest to what I was thinking about. So he like clicked it and then he had that shell there. And all it was the outer shell. It wasn't like a complete functioning thing or whatever. But the stuff that it generated was based on the models that he had made before. And I think that's the thing that got
me. Off the internet.
Right. It wasn't just like, let's go to Google and see what an air fryer looks like. It was, somehow it had to have understood what an air fryer was. But the curves, the shapes, the fillets, all the things that made it look a certain way were based on the work that he had done previously in Fusion. And like, if he had a habit of building things this way and designing this way, it used that as the stuff to learn from for the model. So, I mean, I don't know him, but what he was saying was all of these things look like something I would have done, not just something AI would have done. And I think that was the thing that really got me. It was like, oh, like you're learning from the individual rather than from the, you know, the internet, which I think is why everything looks like garbage, is because it's just an amalgamation of everybody's everything all the time. So there was stuff like that really stood out to me, that was kind of not what I was expecting. I was expecting the top level, you know, I don't know, make this thing look a certain way and then it just like does it for you and then whatever. But it felt like it was working for the creative rather than against or in place of the creative. I don't, but you know, it was a really cool time. Some of the stuff that they're doing is incredible. This isn't supposed to be an advertisement for them. It's just, I was immersed in it for several days. So I saw a lot of stuff and my brain is still reeling a little bit from all the different things.
Did you guys workshop any design stuff? Did they ask you to do any active designing?
No, I was there as just to watch.
Spectator?
Yeah. There was a, so the media entertainment area or section or whatever of them, it's like Alias and Maya, those types of 3D softwares, you know, that are made for games and movies and stuff. They did this demo where they had a two-dimensional, if I remember this correctly, they had a two-dimensional image of a street, and it was like a cross street, and there were buildings in the background, and it was nighttime, and there were lights, but it was a two-dimensional image. And so they then, in this whatever software it was, they clicked. Gosh, I want to say this right because I don't want to like overstep it, but I'm pretty sure it was called like Motion Master or something. But they clicked a start point in the middle of one of the street on a 2D image, and then they clicked down the street in another place, and then said, "Make a human run this path," and this is like a 3/4 view down on a city street, right? And it generated a skeleton type model of a humanoid. And this is within seconds, live demo. It generated a humanoid that started running in a realistic running pattern along this path. And it ran through a fence that was in the image. And so he was like, well, obviously we can't do that. So he clicked in the middle of this line and drug it out around the fence. And then it just ran around the fence. And he was like, oh, it needs to go around the corner. So then he clicked and drug it past a 2D image of a building around the corner. And so AI understood that that was supposed to be a building. And so then this character ran around the fence to the corner and then made a big swing and went around behind a building that didn't actually exist. I was like, I mean, that's like days of work to get an animator to make something run like a human along a path. And then if the path changes, it's another day's worth of work to, you know, it was crazy. And you could hear everybody in the room that does that kind of work go, let me spend my time being creative and making the model look better and making effects and, you know, doing this other stuff rather than like the grunt work of point to point animation, which is always kind of tough.
That's pretty incredible.
So it was a bunch of stuff like that, you know, he was saying, you know, we're not trying to replace the animator. We're trying to make it so that the animator's time can be, you know, 10 times as productive and they can focus on the part that they actually like rather than, you know,
the story and the characters
around a fence or whatever. So it was really, really cool. And then they were doing all this crazy like motion capture stuff where they would just swap out, they would create AI characters and then you could do human motion capture and then they would just be like, give me an alien that has these things sticking out of its head. And then it would generate that and then apply that to the motion capture in real time. Just wild stuff. Very, very wild stuff I'll never use, but you know, it's really interesting to see.
What programs specifically were these? Were they Maya?
They were, I think there's a separate program that works with Maya. I think it's called Motion Master or Motion something like that.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is not stuff I've ever, you know, I used Maya for like a week in college.
Yeah,
100 years ago, so I don't really know anything about it.
I downloaded a pirated copy back in the day, used it for a week as well.
And then you were like, nope, this is not for me.
This is way too complex.
It was a really cool time. And then I also I got to hang out with Zyla Foxland. She was there. And then a guy named Harvey Newman, who was a game developer. He's from the UK. And so the three of us were brought there by Autodesk. So we kind of got taken around from place to place. We had people like making sure we got to the places we need to be and getting us past security. And security was really heavy. It was pretty wild. Like for these keynotes where the CEO is on stage, like it was pretty legit. So we got taken places, you know, and made sure that we had everything we need. We got handled was the way we kept saying it. Like there is a handler that is handling us, which was a little bit weird, but not bad. Just I'm not used to that. We had a really good time, and just being in Nashville for a couple of days was cool. So, yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to. And then before that and after that, I've been working on the pool house. I don't know if I actually talked about. I don't think we've recorded since I started working on it.
No, you had plans last time.
Yeah.
And material.
Yeah. So now I have a building. Great. Now it is. Framing was done in like 3 days, which went way faster than I thought it was going to. That was kind of weird. But got the whole thing framed in 3 days. It has 99% of the sheathing on it. I have two pieces I have to put on the backside of it.
I want to point this out to our listeners.
Okay.
That you sent us a photo, and it's impressive that only you did it. No help.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
So far, yeah. And I was telling you guys earlier, like, my dad has been over a few times. He listens to the show. But he's offered to, you know, if you need some help lifting things or whatever, just let me know. And I really am trying to see how far I can get on this whole thing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that started with the design. Like, I wanted to design the entire thing. And then I verified that design with an architect, you know, to make sure, like, I'm not doing stupid things. But I really wanted to design it from the ground up and build as much of it as I can from the ground up by myself. And there's going to come a point where I can't anymore. Like, there's a big double door that goes on the front. I can't move a double door, glass door by myself. There's just no way. It wouldn't be safe for the door. So, you know, there will come a point where I'll have to get some help, but I'm trying my best to kind of see what my limit is on capability, you know? So far, my shoulders and my forearms are telling me where that limit is. It's mm-hmm. very close. I'm feeling it. So I was telling my dad last night, I think I could go into construction, but I don't think my body really wants me to, because I'm like waking up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh, my shoulder's just not happy. So, but so I've got it almost sheathed, and I've got flashing tape covering almost all of the seams. And so I'm almost at a point where I can start putting on the rafters, which will show up this week. And that feels really cool. Like, being able to get the roof on and keep water out of it, because it's been super dry for the last several weeks. And then this week, it is not super dry. It is super wet. So that's kind of a drag, but I think it's going to be really cool to be able to, you know, close up the roof and then see if I actually got it to stay dry on the inside. But I'm also having to pivot to a different project that I've told you guys about, but I can't really talk about yet. It's an unreleased product. And so I'm pivoting to work on that for the next couple of weeks. So I think the building's going to have to pause, which is a kind of a bummer, because I'm like, okay, good, you know, momentum on it, and I'm working on it a little bit every day and everything. So, yeah, that's what I've been into. It's mostly new stuff for me, but I think we were going to talk about not new stuff, about relearning things that we have already done. And David, you mentioned this a little bit with your keyboard project, how many disciplines were a part of that. What of those disciplines did you have to go back and refresh on?
Most definitely the screen printing is like exposing screen. So I've got a older screen printing video. I went and rewatched it. I know you have a video, and it's when you don't do something every week or every month, at least what for me, I'll speak for myself, I completely forget it. Like, many years ago, I made a pen turning video for the lathe. And there's a process to it, because you're using all these pre-built parts to make a pen. And every single time I go to make a new pen, I have to go watch my old video on how to do that, to relearn it. And the screen printing was the exact same thing. I had to relearn it. I'm like, oh, I didn't talk about my exposure times in the video. So now I got to go do a test, and I got to do this and that. And I have screen printed on fabrics and I have screen printed on posters, but I've never screen printed on metal, which has its own set of challenges. So not only am I trying to relearn this thing, but I'm also trying to learn how to do it this way. And you would think, I would have thought, it's all the same process. You're just maybe using different inks as what you need to. So it turns out I'm using an acrylic ink. Maybe ideally you'd want to use some sort of enamel based ink for printing on metal because it dries really hard. You don't need to top coat it with anything. But the problem with enamel ink is
enamel would be like a solvent based?
Yes, exactly. Then to clean your screens, to clean all your equipment, then you got to use some sort of like mineral spirits or whatever instead of water.
Stinky.
That sounds awful to me.
Yeah.
So I wanted to stick with acrylics, and I'm just going to do a top coat later today. And so I'm using acrylic on metal. And usually when you screen print, you have an offset. So it's sticking up like an eighth of an inch off the surface. And so when you run your squeegee on it, the screen makes contact and then lifts off.
Right at the squeegee.
And turns out that with metal, you don't want to do that. And you need...
Really?
Yeah, and you need, well, not in some cases. I'm using a 230 mesh screen, which is a very high detail screen. You would think I've got tiny little letters. I want high detail. I wish I would have recorded more of the failures in the video, but my acrylic ink wasn't thick enough to like, I would do a test on a piece of cardboard and it would be absolutely perfect. Every fine little detail is all in there. And then when I went to print on the metal, it kind of bled.
Yeah, because the cardboard sucks your moisture right away.
It sucks it in. And then
the metal doesn't.
There.
Yeah.
Metal doesn't. So yeah. The ink then wants to like bleed. Spread out. So I thickened it up. I used some sort of like gel medium to thicken it up, and that helped, but it wasn't perfect. And so doing some research, and I was like, put no offset, your screen right on, mm-hmm. on the surface. And then it's what I use, and it's much better. It's still not perfect. And I'm learning that maybe I wanted a lower mesh screen to allow more of the heavier ink to just go through and just sit on there. And so it's a learning process. It's not perfect, but it is handmade. And so, you know, if you take your magnifying glass, you're going to be like, well, that's not a very good print.
And that's evidence that you're a jerk if you do.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of evidence out there, Bob. There
is not a lot you. I meant the person that goes to it with the magnifying glass.
I gotcha.
Not you.
So this is... this is going in my art show. We can talk about that next week. There's a little bit more details on that, but this is one of my art pieces. And so, but anyway, going back to the topic, I had to relearn plus learn on top of that. And the struggle with that for me is most of my videos have a sponsor, or if you're a listener and you're making something for a client, you need to figure out your end date. You need to work within that, and relearning just throws all of that right out the window. And I have I expected I was going to have the screen printing done 2 days ago and I could move on to all the guts and the internals, but it took me over a day to do that. So now I'm behind, and there's the part of me is like, I love a project that there is no learning. I could just do what I know how to do, and I know how long it's going to take, and everything is going to come out just fine. But that doesn't push me forward. So this is one of those projects that it's been frustrating, but the reward is much bigger.
Yeah, I think that project where you already know the stuff, you have a lower probability for like an aha kind of like wow moment.
Yep.
Because you know you're not pushing yourself to do something new, but I would imagine when you got that to print the way that you actually intended it to after the trial and error, then you were like, oh, like I got it, or I got close to it, or whatever. You know, you're just going to have more chance of that if you're trying new stuff, I think. Yeah, I do a lot of relearning, but I think, I don't know, I always feel a little bit bad. I don't know why I feel bad, but when I relearn stuff for a video, I know that I'm relearning the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm only having
to
look at
what you need.
Yeah, what that part is that I need for this particular instance. And I guess from one perspective, it's cool that, you know, we get the opportunity to learn enough of things that we can go back and grab this one little detail. And like, I just have to remember how to do this one little thing because I've done it, all of it before. But I do think there's part of me that's like, I really don't know how to do that. I just knew where to look for that one little piece of information to get it done for this project. But I don't feel confident like I could teach somebody else how to screen print or how to whatever again without way more work. So I always mourn that a little bit or whatever, you know, that I didn't put in more effort. But I'm also reminded of, I don't know if this is apocryphal or not. Like, I'm not sure if this is true, but I always heard the story about Einstein. And I've probably said this on here before. He was at a science conference or something one time, and somebody interviewing him asked him what the atomic weight of so-and-so element was. Because, you know, he's a genius, right? He's like super science guy. And of course, he's going to know that. And he was like, I don't know what that is. And they were amazed that he didn't know. But he was like, I know where a periodic table of elements is. That's right. You don't have to know it all. You just have to know how to find the answer. And So I guess when I have to go back and relearn a little piece of something, I'm like, yeah, even Einstein didn't know all of the things within what he did. Yeah. He just knew how to research. He knew how to find. He knew how to get to the thing he needed. So, you know.
Yeah, I mentioned before we started, I have to do a carbide 3D video. When I started with carbide 3D in the beginning of the year around, I guess it was around March, when they sent me a machine, the deal there was I was going to make a video every other month for them. And that was the plan. So I was like, all right, I'll learn the whole new discipline. I did the first video and then Kevin moved on and he gave me to somebody else. And that other person didn't contact me until like a week ago. So it's been this long. Whatever. It's no big deal. I don't care. But the machine sat there. I actually even said to Kevin, I go, hey, the machine's in my shop. Should I put it in long-term storage? Because I'm never going to use it again unless you need me to. And he said, no, we still want it, but I passed you on. I moved on to a different job and so on and so on. You know, no hard feelings whatsoever. I just wanted to clarify because it's taking up a footprint. I'll put it in my storage building. And anyway, I got reconnected with them recently, and I think I have to do a video in October. And I was like, oh man, I got to go back and figure out how to use all that software again. Not to mention there's a 3D element of the software that I was going to try and use in this video, which gets back to me having to relearn Fusion. Not necessarily in this particular instance, but it just reminds me that I want to get back into Fusion and I want to download your class, Bob, and learn it. And it's definitely on my to-do list. I know I keep talking about it, but it has to be because there are a couple projects coming up which would be good if I knew that. And I was really hot on Fusion for a minute there. I was hanging out with Kevin. I'm just drawing a blank. Kevin would teach me, we'd sit together, my friend Kevin, and he would show me how he did certain things and I would show him how I do certain things. And I was really gaining some traction there and then sending things to 3D print. But then one day you just don't have a need for it. And then it's just suddenly, then you don't have a need for it for the next project. And then it just starts to fade. And, but I always remind myself of this, and it's similar to what you said about the Einstein thing. It's like, the information is sitting there. The computer, dedicated computer for that is sitting there. The software is on it. And I did it one time from zero. Now I have a little experience. I could do it again from zero with a base. And that's what I always remind myself. I even use the ShopBot lately, infrequently, that every time I sit at the software, I'm like, how am I going to do that? It happens also with the plasma cutter, with the fast cut plasma cutter. Every time I got to do a project, I got to go, okay, what is the procedure here? Remove before flight. Okay. Then this, you know, it's like, you got to go through the motions and remember. And when you get it, it's like, okay, I'm back.
I think that might be why I've never thought about it this way, but I think that might be why I kind of like stepped away from using a CNC is because I didn't use it long enough. And then looking back at that kind of ramp up period again to actually use it effectively seems like I know I could figure it out, but man, like, well, that's a lot of work to just get back into that for one thing.
Yeah. You know what it's like? It's like akin to waking up out of, it's akin to waking up out of bed after like a day of like playing football. You know, the next day you got to get out of bed. Like after working all day, like on building a building. I know I felt like that working at the graveyard house. I come home, I lay down, I go to sleep. In the morning, I feel every joint, especially at my age. And when it's time to go back to a CNC or a plasma cut and I haven't opened the machine in a long time, just like, oh, okay, I know I'm going to blow a tip. I'm going to destroy some metal. I'm going to crash it. All right, here we go. Just try to avoid all those things and remember what I'm not supposed to do. You know, half the time I'm trying to remember what I'm not supposed to do versus what I have to do.
Right.
So it's...
I think that's my complaint with something like light burn for lasers. I have a certain laser that only uses light burn. And light burn is a very complex piece of software. It can do a lot of things. And every time I open it up, I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. I don't even know how to connect it to the machine. And I feel like I have to relearn it. And I have this other laser. I don't want it to be an ad, but I have this other laser that has its own software. And it's extremely simple. I know, okay, I can just draw a circle here and I can hit send and it just goes in the machine. There's no relearning. Lightburn needs an easy mode. It needs to cover up all the stuff that I don't
need. I'm actually pretty good at Lightburn. I've been playing. Last night I started making more leather bags for the Christmas season. So I'm making 25 leather bags. And so last night I cut up a bunch of leather that I had. And anyway, so I was using Lightburn all night last night. But I'm pretty good at Lightburn because it's like a combination of Illustrator and like 10 other programs.
But I think all of those things, it's not a matter of them being difficult. It's a matter of like, how much do we hold, how much of that rudimentary knowledge that can we hold about something for an extended period of time when we don't use it? Mm-hmm. Because if you come back and you were to use Lightburn like once a week for a few weeks, that basic stuff, how to connect the machine, how to set up a basic file, and that would be second nature. Mm-hmm. But it's because you have to relearn the step one. I do this too. You have to relearn step one every time you use it. And so there's got to be a way, you know, maybe it's just making ourselves cheat sheets about what step one, step two look like mm-hmm. for these things. While we're doing them and learning them for the first time, we should be writing this stuff down so that when we come back in 6 months, we don't have to go
Plus, there's the magic of
CNC.
You wrote it down, and for some reason that just sticks in your brain.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
So that's why, I mean, honestly, that's the reason why I don't use the Tormach anymore. Because every single time I came to it, I had to remember the offset. I had to remember this. Even my friend who has a Tormach, he's got a whole list in front of him of like basically pre-flight procedure is basically what he calls it. And it's like, do this. Don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do this. And every time I went to the Tormach, I actually ended up giving the Tormach away to my friend Dave DTB Fab. Check out Dave. And he wanted to learn about it. So I was like, take my machine, learn how to use it. And I know Dave, he'll learn how to use it and then he'll get a better one. I said, just give it back when you're done. By then, the every memory that he's going to show up at the door and I'm going to be like, what is this? And you are? And what is it? More specific. You know, I'm not but if it ever comes back to me, then I'll challenge myself to try and make something else on it. But in general, it's the bigger problem is too, and it's not a problem. It's something that I'm obviously very fortunate. There's so many things to learn because I have this machine and I have that machine and I have that machine and I have this procedure that I've done. And, you know, when it comes to using the kiln, what is the recipe I use for melting glass? I can't remember. Is it 17 or is it 017? I should have wrote it on the thing with a magic marker. But the fact that we are challenged because of what we do with so many different disciplines and the fact that we're basically small production companies that have to keep the show going, it's why we have so many things to forget. And I'd rather have more things to forget than one thing to have to remember. It makes life more exciting.
That's beautiful. Yes.
Yeah. That's.
Thank you. Put that on a bumper sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm seeing this right now with my wife, and I'm not talking about her behind her back. This is an active conversation that we're having. But so this pool house thing that we're building, the original intent was to be a ceramic studio for her, because mm-hmm. a few years back she was doing pottery on a weekly basis. She was learning from a friend. That friend moved away, and so she still has the knowledge, but she doesn't have the practice of all of that anymore. She doesn't, you know, just the details of like, what do you use for this? And how long do you do this? And how do you reclaim the clay in this way and whatever? And so we've been planning for a long time to build this studio for her to be dedicated for her to be able to do this thing that she really enjoys. But she hasn't done that thing in several years. And so now we've built this building kind of like with the intent that it will be whatever it needs to be, you know. But I can tell from her perspective, she has that feeling that we're talking about like, I don't know if I can relearn all this stuff. I don't remember it. I'm going to have to make the effort to, even though I want to mm-hmm. do it again, I have yeah. to figure out. Now I don't have somebody here to teach me like I did before. So I have to figure out how to relearn this stuff, where to relearn this stuff to make it even worth the place and the stuff and the time to do it again. And so I can see that struggle in her, you know, and I don't know a way around it other than like you just, with all of these things, we just have to decide that it's that the payoff is worth the getting into it again.
Yeah. You just got to remember what was the spark that got you through it the first time.
Mm.
And something interesting, you just reminded me when you were talking about pottery. There are a couple, what I tend to do with pottery is, and I still don't know the clear cut answer. When you bisque something, I bake it probably at the cone it's supposed to be baked at. And then I glaze it and bake it at the cone again. So it comes out like a burnt piece of toast. And I'm starting to realize that like bisque is just a little bit of heat. Not, it doesn't have to be like the same cone, but I've never had formal training. And every time I turn on YouTube to look at a potter to talk about it, they start talking like this. And then they never get to the point because potters all talk like this and they never get to the point. And then I go, you know what? I'm going to figure it out on my own. And then I end up toasting my bowl because they never get to the point. But now I haven't really experienced ChatGPT with pottery. Now I'm just saying this to myself out loud.
Oh, yeah.
So ChatGPT has the answer to a lot of things. The other day I was having trouble. You know, every once in a while your laser just resets and you don't know why. Everything's like all of a sudden the origin's in the wrong place. And every time you go to do perimeter, it's like, it's going to go out of bounds. I'm like, no, it's not. The material's right in the middle of the table. It's like, nope, it's going to go out of bounds. You want me to try it anyway? I'm like, and so
that's
it goes.
CNC, yeah.
And so I'm like, why did it reset the origin? Why does it think that this plat, it's in the middle of my screen, is off the left side of the complete palette? It's like in space outside the machine. And so I went to ChatGPT. I was like, how do I get my origin? And it's like, oh, go to this menu. Go to that. I'm like, oh, well, thank you, ChatGPT. You just answered questions I was trying to figure out for like 20 minutes on my own. And a friend of mine reached out to me and he's like, hey, I'm having a killer time with my laser because I can't get the thing to do. And I was like, ask ChatGPT exactly what you asked me, because he has a different brand. And he did. He goes, they knew exactly what to do. It's like, there you go. So when it comes to pottery, I could ask ChatGPT, like, what is a good thing for bisque? So, but this is the biggest point I was trying to get to. A couple months ago, me and Rachel went out to dinner with some friends in the neighborhood in Woodstock, and Lee's a potter. And I didn't know that. I mean, he does everything. He's like us. He does everything. And he said, I go, oh, you did the, there was pottery everywhere. I go, oh, you say I did it all. I'm like, oh. And then I hammered him with like 10 questions. And he's just like, oh, the answer's it. Boop. He's like really quick thinker like us. And he just rattled off the answers. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Now you tell him he should make pottery YouTube videos that aren't boring?
He doesn't care about YouTube. But it was funny how, so the point I'm making is like when you're in the vicinity of other people that like to do that, you could vampire some information from them.
Mm. You know? That's a verb?
Yeah. Vampire some information.
It is now.
Yeah. Say, oh, well, and, made, and like, how did you paint this?
In the pottery example, like we went to another lady we know in town who has been a potter she's in her late 60s, I think. And she's been a potter since she was in college. So like active, she has her own studio. She sells stuff all the time. She makes beautiful work. So we went and toured her studio a couple of years ago, and she walked us through and showed all the different things that she, like her process, and she had multiple places set up so she could teach people and stuff. And then she had a room with her kilns in it, And so on one side of the room, there were a couple of kilns, and she had gas and she had electric, which I didn't realize that they were used for different things, but she had both of those. And then on the other side of the room, it was her glazing area. And this was eye-opening for me just because I had no experience with this stuff. It was a table like as big as my desk, so probably 5 or 6 feet long, and then shelves above it up on the wall all the way up this like 10 or 12 foot height ceiling. And on these shelves were little pieces of, you know, like different ceramic. They were just like chunks with different things on them, different glazes. And they were just in these little bins, and they were just stacked up. And there were tons, like hundreds and hundreds of these things. And then right in front of her on the desk, there were like 10 binders. And each one of these binders was maybe 3 inches thick. And they were labeled on the outside. And she pulled out one binder and flipped it open. And they were recipe books. Hmm. And all of these binders were the recipes for all of these samples.
Hmm.
And the thing that struck me there was that she had done, all of that was experimentation, but she documented every single piece of it.
Wow, so she could pull a tile and remember how she got it.
She could grab one down and be like, oh, this is the one I want. Look at the number written on the back of it. Oh, it's in this binder. Pull out the binder. Go to the page. There's the recipe. And that was, you know, obviously she'd been doing it for 40 years or something. So she has a huge amount of time to be able to build that. But it was intentional experimentation with intentional documentation.
Yeah.
And it was in a place that she could go to. She didn't have to remember any of that stuff. And I was like, oh, I should probably do that. And I never have. But we document things, we document results, but we don't document process in that way. I don't, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, when we could easily have a book that's like, how to get started on the laser for the first time in 6 months. And it's a page with the basic instructions you need, you know, like all we have to do is write that stuff down one time. And then we save ourselves frustration and time.
You know what I'm going through? I'm going through the mental hurdle of like, this is how my mind goes. I go, okay, I got 35 notebooks started this year. Should I take one of them and rip out the first 10 pages and turn that into my laser documentation? Or should I start a new one? Maybe I should make one with a leather cover that would look really good. Like all of a sudden.
I have an idea. I wrote down a product idea right there based on that. So, yeah.
Hmm. And then should
anyway, I think the relearning thing is good because it does force you to, a lot of times we look at our own stuff to relearn things. But it also forces us to go look at what other people have done or what the newest way to do that thing is now instead of when we did it the first time. But I think it's also good just because like we combine skills so often that trying to maintain all of that stuff in our head all the time, I think would be an unnecessary weight on your brain. So being able to set something aside that you don't need for a while and then knowing how to find it again when you need it and just getting the necessary like bits to move ahead. I think it's actually a skill, but it is time consuming.
Yeah.
I think
it kind of reminds me of like my special skill is if I know that we have to do, for instance, like Boston, when we all gathered in Boston a couple weekends ago, Rachel's like, what time do we need to be there? And this is like 2 days before. I go, I have no idea. Do you know where it is? I go, I don't know. Where's the hotel? I go, I did a screen grab when I got the confirmation. That should be in my notes. Should be in my pictures. Well, I'm like, I don't know. Well, when we get in the car to go to Boston, because I know the window, it's like a 10-hour window that we have to get there. I'll type in the hotel address and then I'll know where we're going. But until
that's
then,
a problem that I don't need to deal with until
I don't have to
know
anything about that until, you know, it's like people always say to me, what exactly, which are you taking the early flight? I go, I don't know. I just know it's on the 6th. So on the morning of the 5th, I'll start thinking about it. And that's 3 months from now. So I don't care. I'm not even going to open them. I'm going to look. You know, if we're trying to schedule something like a dinner, we'll schedule it like 2 hours before. We don't have to do it now. It's 3 months out. Like, are you gonna say it? I'm like, I don't know. So I gotten to the point in my life now at my age, I just like, what do you, when, how will you, I'm like, I go, I have no idea. I haven't even thought about it. And I'm not going to think about it until I need to. So if you're worried about your plans, you're on your own. You know, like when we all have to get together at a place.
That's why we don't rely on Jimmy for planning anything.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we were years and years and years. It goes back to that thing. Remember, like, you know, I'm kind of known for that thing where it's like, how are we going to get this down the stairs? I'm going, I don't know. But right now we have to move it 3 inches from where it is now. Let's do that. You know, it's very much similar, like in the life overall life view. And I remember I was driving to California with a girlfriend 25 years ago, and she just kept going, what's going to happen when we get to Idaho? I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. Where are we going to spend the night? I go, I don't know. When it starts getting dark and I get tired, we'll find a hotel. Well, do you want me to schedule one now? I'm like, no, because I don't know how I'm going to feel by the time we get to that border. I don't know. Let's just worry about it then. And that was before cell phones. So when you look back, it was a little bit more nerve-wracking, but who knew what cell phone convenience would bring? So it was what it was at the time.
That's what MapQuest was for.
No, you just look for a sign on the highway, like hotel, you pull in, and it's like... The doors are swinging in the wind. You're like, oh, this place is closed. Let's get back on the highway.
Cool. All right. Any other thoughts on this, on relearning stuff?
Nah. Like, I just play it as a game. I'm like, okay, let's get back into this, I guess.
I do think for me, I'm going to try to start building myself some sort of cheat sheet things for some of these things that I, especially like CNC and laser that I have to come back to on a regular basis, and that step 1 through 4 is always like a hurdle that would be easy to document. So I think
I noticed before when I said pre-flight list, you jumped to your notebook. So you got the idea from the pre-flight list. So he's not saying anything. He's keeping his stone face.
I saw the light bulb go off. Yep.
That's Mike Dubnow, the millionaire maker that Jocko did the video on. He's got the pre-flight list on his tarmac door.
Gotcha.
Wasn't there, going back to your graphic design days, wasn't there some sort of layout program called pre-flight? Does that sound familiar at all? Like before
remember Quark.
Adobe InDesign? No.
Pre-flight. It does sound familiar now, thinking about it. But...
I don't know. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, who are awesome. Our list has gotten all flipped around, and I don't know why. I sort the list by the same...
See, look, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I see. Whoa. That's not in English. The list has gotten all flipped around, and I read the list so many times that now it kind of throws me off. But our top supporters are... A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Corey Ward, Making with Mog, Matthias Garnow, Michael Manegin, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Lowen Design, Scott to Daddy Yourself, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, and Works by Solo. But also, people like Scott Sykes. Scott's been supporting for a very long time.
Thank you.
Since 2018.
Thank you. Goodness gracious.
Wow. Big thanks to everybody over there. That helps us out at Patreon. It helps, and it makes a big difference, and we are really grateful for every single bit of the support. Every level gets the after show. So, you know, if you're at the $1 level, you get the after show. If you're at the $8,000 level, which there's not one, but if there were, that person would get. Maybe we should make one. Everybody gets the after show.
They could spend the night at my house if they visit 8,000. Come spend whatever.
I'm going to put that on my own Patreon. $8,000, you get to stay at Jimmy's house.
Oh, there you go. Let's all add that. Everybody gets the after show. And to get that, you just go to patreon.com/makingit. There's a link to that in the show notes. And then sign up at any level. The RSS feed for the after show podcast is on Patreon. You get that, you put it in your podcast player, and then you can listen to the after show. I was going to ask you guys about superpowers because you mentioned that. And so today I want to talk about superpowers in the after show.
All right.
But yeah, big thanks to everybody that helps us out over there. We are grateful. Next week will be the 500 episode. So we will have the 500 show that we did edited, and we'll release that one. So I don't think we'll have a new show next week, I assume.
Mm-hmm. We'll all everybody that could make it will get a chance to hear it.
Yeah. And it turns out my joke did make it into the after show. It did get recorded.
I mean, oh, that's great. That's fantastic.
Guys, when you're in the after show, get yourself a hot coffee, get a towel, get a blanket, sit in a chair, put your feet up.
Take a break.
I just want to put a disclaimer. You don't have to listen to the after show.
Bob, I must say, I didn't compliment you on the level of confidence and the stick-to-itiveness when you told that joke. You were like a, not even, I'm not even being sarcastic in the slightest, but you were like a very professional comedian telling that joke.
No. Oh. Thank you
really you. You must have signed it. You must have said told that joke at least four times.
Oh, many more times.
he's really good at this.
That's great.
And well, yeah. Anyway, yeah. We'll talk about that later. All right, cool. You guys got anything to recommend this week?
Oh my goodness, I got a good one.
Okay.
So this why
I got a good one too.
All right, I'm just going to send you this. I don't know how to say the name of this channel, but this guy made a desk that is the end of Super Mario World 1-1, where Mario is jumping over, he climbs up the block stairs and goes to the flagpole. He made an inlaid desk of that entire scene. The amount of pieces and detail and...
Oh, this is Wormwood. Yeah.
Wormwood. Thank you. Thank you. It is incredible. Holy cow. Yeah.
Okay. So Wormwood makes gaming tables, like really nice, legit gaming tables. And so that makes sense that they would. Oh, man. That
this is a must watch.
Wow. Okay. Awesome.
Have I recommended. Who's this from? I'm sorry. I just got a message from my neighbor. He's using my property for something. He's just letting me know. I got a little confused. New Mind is a great channel. I don't know if I've recommended it before, but it's one of these science channels that digs deep into a very mundane situation, like cutting. The newest video, straight line motion, hinges, and he does a deep dive. He did a whole video on drive shafts and the genesis of drive shafts, which. Who would ever stop to think about drive shafts? Hmm. But it's a really great, well-executed channel. And they do a deep dive on these mundane things, and you learn so much about all the stuff you didn't think you needed to know. So check out New Mind. It's a science engineering channel. It's very successful.
Cool.
Check it out.
I have a couple. One is the Maker Knife 2.
Yes.
So Jocko released the Kickstarter for his new Maker Knife, which looks amazing. And the video that he put together to release the knife is amazing.
Cinematic.
Ridiculous.
Art. Yeah.
So he's been working on that for I don't even know how long. He's been sending me like little drafts of it and stuff along the way, and it's changed and grown and stuff a lot. I got to be the voice of the little AI bot that he used in the video, which was a lot of fun. But man, what a video. It's so cool. And the knife looks amazing, and the Kickstarter's doing really well. So just everybody go check the video out at very least, but also support the Kickstarter. It looks really cool. The other one is the guy that I mentioned earlier, Harvey Newman, that I met at AU, super nice guy. Like, we got to be friends in a very short amount of time, just a couple of days. He's from the UK, but he's a game developer. He's been in the industry for, I think, 25 years or something. And so his videos are about animation and about game development, and they're less technical and more about the kind of, how does this happen? How do games happen? How does animation happen? How do you get started in these things? He's working on a book, I think, and he's got a couple of courses out. And one of my kids is interested in game development. So we talked a lot about, you know, how do you get started at this point in time in down this path and stuff. And he gave me some really great resources to share. But I think if you're at all interested in how games happen and, you know, what it takes for these games to exist and how you would get started in like the indie game development or animation. Just go check out some of his videos. Super cool guy. Really nice guy. Check out Harvey.
Check it out.
Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about superpowers in the after show.
Oh, So, Maker Camp's coming up October 10th. Oh. Come for the day. I know you guys aren't coming. I'm not bothered. You guys did your obligation to the... You guys came out to Boston and said, we won't see you guys for years now. Years.
That's not true. That's not true.
So wait, this would go... October, by the way, is 11 years for us, right?
Yeah.
Every year we try to remember when we started. It's 14, right?
It's Halloween, right? Yeah.
It's your anniversary, right, Dave?
Yes, our wedding anniversary will be October 17th.
And that's 11 years?
Yes. Yes.
You're supposed to know that.
Just I know. I know. We both forget. Yes. Last year was our 10. Yes. 11 years.
11 years. So that's why we have a good anchor to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's 11 years.
Don't depend on me for that.
Yeah. We should probably write it down. That would solve that problem. But
there's always somebody to remind us in the Patreon list. All right.
Cool. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Thank you.
Love you.